It's part of why I was a drug trafficker. And I knew that I had a skill set that could be put to work in a capacity that wasn't being done really anywhere in an open manner, such as the way that I wanted to do it. And so I started to think that this would be a really good idea to go out and start speaking. And I, you know, was successful in having some of those lectures, but it just wasn't paying the bills. It wasn't enough. So I needed to find a way to get a sponsor and produce the kind of content that I have been producing. And that's what I did. And that's what I'm doing. And that's what I'm going to continue to do because it's very, very important.
I'm Steve Murphy, DEA Special Agent retired and now host of the Game of Crimes podcast. If you've seen the Netflix series Narcos, then you know my story. I now bring you stories of heroism and bravery from our law enforcement and military heroes, and occasionally from the criminals that they faced. Welcome to Game of Crimes.
Hey, all you Game of Crimes fans, thank you so much for coming back. It's Murph here. We're here with part two of this week's episode with Ben Freeland, an admittedly wealthy, to-do young Jewish kid that grew up in Beverly Hills that had everything he wanted growing up, started his own business out of college, got interested in some other businesses that might have taken him on the other side of that thin blue line that we like to talk about here. He's already told us about all the things he was involved with marijuana trafficking across the United States and some of the gangs that he was affiliated with, as well as becoming an informant for the postal inspectors, the U.S. Marshals, and the FBI, as well as state and local law enforcement, and what all that led to. I want to ask him one more question before we get into his next phase of life. And Ben, is since all of that happened, and I'm sure you've had to testify in trials and your name has been leaked out to defendants around the country that you had cooperated against, have you received or do you anticipate receiving any death threats because of that?
That's one of the reasons why I started doing what I was doing, which is being more public about the role that I had. No, the answer is no, because as I mentioned to you previously, the individuals that I cooperated against that knew who I was or found out are either dead or they cooperated themselves. And so my safety is not in jeopardy, nor would I ever do that to my wife and daughter. So the answer is no. And I have never had a death threat. I've had, you know, individuals that are incarcerated that were around me, I think that were jealous about the fact that I was able to cooperate and they sort of got tough around me. But it was all bark and no bite.
Well, and you have to do what you have to do. I want to talk a little bit with you and get your opinion on the informant system, because you've got a lot of personal experience in there. And this is one of the things that you deal with law enforcement now, trying to teach them myths and mistakes and how to do things better. And I guess the first question I got for you is, what's the biggest myth about being an informant, either on the bad guy side or on the law enforcement side?
The biggest myth, there's a lot of myths. Mm-hmm. It's not glamorous. It's not the way that you see in the movies. It can be a lot more dangerous than it is perceived. And it also can be a lot more safe than it is perceived. It's not something that you can walk into, especially in the level that I was at. You can't just become a high echelon informant. You're either, you know, selected to do so, or you put yourself in a position where you've become that person. So it's not glamorous and it's not safe, and it is safe. That's so crazy. I'm answering that. So, you know, you just have to be smart. And you have to understand the risks, and you also have to understand that sometimes it's not as dangerous as you might think it is. It's periods of time of safety. This is probably the same in your line of work. You know, it's 99% of the time you're sitting back, and that 1% of the time you have to be on your toes. And so that's the reality.
And you know, I mean, working undercover is similar to working as an informant, although not quite as involved, because or it wasn't for me. I'm not like a Joe Pistone from the FBI who was Donnie Brasco that infiltrated the mob for 6 years, who, by the way, is a very good friend of mine. My undercover roles typically lasted, meetings would last for maybe a couple hours at most, usually not even that long. And then I'm back out and you're coming and going a lot. But wearing a wire or a recording device for either one of us is always a concern, just in case they pat you down. Now you can, I would get real macho and upset that somebody wanted to touch me and threats were made on both sides and I'd get my car and drive off. And the thing was, bad guys never think a cop would drive away from a deal. They think cops will do anything to make a deal go. That's just one of the techniques you use.
I think my technique was that I was just me. I was just myself. And I pretended when I was working with people as an informant to be the person that I used to be. So I wasn't trying to be fake. I was just trying to be real. And so that's how I was passed myself off. And I was very effective at that. And, you know, this is no contest, but for me, my sort of undercover role lasted for several years. Mm-hmm. So I was really inundated and surrounded by crime. I used to be doing that as a criminal, and then I was doing it as a criminal and as an informant. So that really messes with your mind because you forget who you are, and also you forget what your role is. It's very confusing. And you asked me what the biggest myth is. Well, mm-hmm. I don't really know how to answer that question, but you better be mentally sound, because it's going to take a toll on you. And it's a very, very dramatic toll. And you have to be of sound mind. And if you aren't, then it's not the right thing for you to be doing.
Right. And you have to be able to think on your feet in a moment's notice, because you never know when somebody is going to pull a gun out and put it up to your head. So now you're working under the direction of handlers, which would be law enforcement. And they want you to do things a certain way. A lot of the handlers have never been in that position. So what are some of the mistakes that handlers make that you saw?
They don't understand criminality. That's not a blanket statement for everyone. There are some great investigators that understand the dynamics of criminals better than others. But for the most part, a lot of handlers are very green, and they don't understand that doing something a certain way would be recognized as something that might be something that someone that is an informant would do. So I think oftentimes they're ill prepared to understand that dynamic. And so they really have to work with the informant to devise a plan. You can't just go up to someone in an organization and say, you know, something that is going to be immediately recognized as a red flag. So you can't have a plan, and I'm talking to the investigators that are listening to this show, you can't have a plan without talking to the informant to execute that plan, because you just can't do that. You have to have their approval and their input before devising a plan to extract information the way that you need it to be extracted.
Right. It's you've got to develop that trusting relationship. It's not that you're looking to be best friends. That's not what this is about, but you need that mutual respect with each other, where I understand on my side what the law is, what the elements of the crimes are, and what we need to obtain so we can prosecute the person under all the elements of that crime and get a successful prosecution. Last thing you want to do is go through all this and they win. But then on the same token, you know how things operate on the other side of the line, what you can say, the terminology that's used, who you can say it to, just like you said, because if you go into the big man and you ask him a question, you've never asked me, why would you want to know that from me? You know, it's not normal. It's very much out of the ordinary. Were there times with your handlers that you completely disagreed, and how did you rectify those disagreements?
Absolutely. Definitely. Now, I want to also go back a little bit here, and you talked about respect and the relationship that one would have with an informant as a handler. My handler, my main handler, I still talk to him to this day. I talked to him last week. We usually talk about an hour at a time. We're very, very close. I love that guy, and he knows who he is. And he's a active postal inspector, and I don't disclose his name until I have my interview with him when he retires in a couple of years.
Which there you go. Too.
But we have a great relationship, and we had that back then too. And we were a killer team with one another, and we were able to execute some incredible things. And it was because of the relationship that we had and that we still have. It wasn't fake. It was real. We were friends, and we are friendly. And I attribute the success of the case to that relationship. And of course, there was times where I disagreed and when I wouldn't do something, because I'm not stupid. I'm not going to put myself in a horrible position and put myself in danger. So I would say, no, we can't do that. And even if they didn't like it, you know, what are they going to do? I'm the only person that's going to allow them to get that information that they needed. And oftentimes I was the one that was with the entire plan the entire time. A lot of times these handlers didn't even understand what I had in my head to do what I needed to do. They sometimes just let me do what I needed to do, honestly. I didn't really need a lot of guidance. Oftentimes I just did it. But when I did have a disagreement, I don't remember or recall the disagreements that I had, but there were many, and I was always very vocal about it. And that is why we were also successful, because of that. So it's very, very important to disagree. And it's very important to be friendly and amicable and have a lasting bond with your informant as a handler, because you won't get far without that.
Right. There are, you know, when I was in Miami, there was one of the agents in our group that we worked with. We were doing a deal, and we ended up in a shootout there in Miami. And my partner ended up getting shot, but the informant was killed on site. We life flighted him out to the hospital, but he never made it to the hospital. But the undercover agent that he was working with, they had gotten so close, they were personal friends, which is never encouraged, to be quite honest. It's you're close professionally, but you're not close on a personal level where you're going to have him to the house. And that agent had some PTSD issues over that, because he was there. He was the undercover when his informant was killed. But that's the reality of working in these times, whether you're working undercover or you're working as informant. That's anything can go wrong at any time. In your opinion, do you think law enforcement relies too heavily on informants?
No, I don't think they rely on them enough.
Okay. Can you expound a little bit?
I mean, obviously nowadays in police work and investigations, there's a lot of reliance on technology. And you and I discussed this when I interviewed you for my publication, and that is that the human element is the most important element to take down criminal networks. And it's an art to develop an informant as effective as a high echelon informant can be. I was very useful because I'm an intelligent person that understands both sides of crime and academia. So I'm able to relay things effectively. One of the things that my handler has discussed with me post-release is that there's not a lot of Benjamin Friedlands. I'm not trying to be narcissistic here. There's not a lot of people that can relay the way that I can do things. There's not a lot of people that can do that. And so if you can find a Ben Friedland, treat him well and do what you can to get as much information as you can from him, and continue to work with him and be friendly and solicit others that are in the same position as him. But absolutely, there is a need to cultivate more confidential sources in an effective manner, because it's a force multiplier for the law enforcement system. Instead of applying more man hours to investigate, you can reduce that dramatically by having an effective informant, by utilizing them in a way that cannot be utilized in any other way. You can't take down a large organization without someone on the inside. So that is a very important thing to do, and it's not being done enough. And it might not be being done enough because it's very difficult to cultivate such a an individual. It's not easy, but you have to have patience. And if you can do it, you're going to be successful as an agency or as a handler or as a unit.
When I was in South America, my partner was Javier Pena, and we were the case agents on the Escobar investigation. He's the best informant handler I've ever met in my life. He has the knack of talking to people who want to be informants and determining, yeah, there's something here, or no, this is just straight out, this guy wants cash for nothing, or whatever his motivation is. And you and I talk quite a bit about the motivations of informants, something that you need to find out what that motivation is. Are they working for money? Are they working off charges? Is it revenge? Is it love? Just, there's several different motivators out there, but you as the investigator need to know what that motivation is. He said out of about 10 potential informants that would come in to talk to us, we were lucky if two had any usable information.
Javier sounds like a legend to me. I only watched about him on the show Narcos, but he's right. You know, you're right too, because you have to know what is compelling that individual to come forward to provide that information. Does he want to take over the role of the person he's taking down? Has his family been threatened? Is he in some kind of romantic tryst? Why is he talking to me? What is the motivation? And oftentimes, it's many of those things that I just mentioned. You have to understand that before you start working with the individual. And oftentimes, there's people that are doing it because there's a very fine line between policing and criminals.
Right.
Criminals are fascinated with police, and police are fascinated with criminals. And so I think a lot of times that informants come through, and this is not spoken a lot, because they're fascinated with the system of how policing and law enforcement works, and they want to understand, they want to be around it. They want to know what guns are using. They want to know what the communication techniques, and they want to be around it. They want to know what the outcome of the operation that they've provided information is. It's very important for you to continue to let the people know that you've done something successfully, because that's what they're doing. That might be one of the things that they want to do. They might have been criminals from such a young age, but they really want to be on the good team. So they want to see how the process works.
Right. And you know what? It's just like any other job. If you get an attaboy for doing a good job, that motivates you to do a better job.
Mm-hmm.
So it carries over. Now, in May 2023, you started a transportation business, right?
I did.
And what's all that about, and why? I'm guessing because you needed income, right?
Well, this was after I got out of prison. When I got out of prison, I started all over. I moved to Minnesota. I became a small business owner after I got my commercial driver's license. And I started a transportation company that specializes in the logistics of luxury RVs at longer distances than 1,000 miles, typically from one coast to the other or from Florida to Iowa. And I became very successful. I was very adamant about my role as a customer service provider. I built very strong relationships with my clients. And, you know, we've now successfully transported over 250 luxury RVs at distances of greater than 1,000 miles. So over 250,000 miles in the last 3 years. And I've kept the business alive. And that's the meat and potatoes of what my business has been for the last several years.
Are these brand new RVs, or are these RVs people already own?
They already own. Typically, the dealership will buy something at an auction house, and instead of putting it on a flatbed, they hire us to drive it from wherever it is to wherever it needs to go.
Okay. So when I first found out about your RV business, I'm thinking moving drugs in an RV in a recreational vehicle is an excellent smuggling method that has been used for years and years. So I'm thinking, all right, Ben, what are you doing here? Did that ever enter your mind?
Yeah, well, I mean, my probation officer was definitely interested in what I was doing. I'm still on United States probation. And so when I had to talk to them about the fact that I was taking these ridiculous luxury RVs from Florida to northern states, they were like, what are you doing? But And I always joke around, it would be the perfect method to transport. And it's coming from the exact area that it needs to go come from. But I have no desire whatsoever to do that anymore. I don't know. Actually, I do know what turned that off, and that's my little girl. But my wife, you know, I got one of these now. Mm-hmm. And I have no desire to delve into that world. And that's why I'm sure one of your next questions is going to be about consultation work. And that's why I do what I do now with consultation work, because I was injured pretty severely in an accident. And I can not really drive as I used to. And so I started doing consulting work full time, and it turned into something that I didn't realize it would become, which was initially doing seminars and lectures at academies and police stations and field offices about the importance of handler-informant relationships, how to target, improve, and maintain existing relationships with informants. That wasn't really paying the bills. So I started posting techniques on LinkedIn, and I started getting a lot of attention, and it turned into something that I had no expectation of it doing. I became a law enforcement influencer on LinkedIn, and I'm in the top 1% of influence on that platform. But I also, what I decided to do, instead of just posting stuff and getting large numbers of views and impressions on that platform, is I wanted to interview individuals like yourself so that I could have a platform for people in the field to read over have them understand the types of techniques that individuals like yourself have used in the field in order to collect effective human intelligence and have and maintain effective relationships with confidential sources. And so I've now been very successful in doing that, and it's been very, very well received. And I think a lot of people are very excited about the interviews that I have now. And, you know, I'm talking to people like you, Steve. You're a legend. I really enjoy talking to you because I have so much respect for you. I know you're doing that you're doing that thing where you're being humble right now, but stop it. I think that all you guys do that. But it's very, very, very exciting. And because there's a very good dynamic between people like me and you coming together to talk with one another, because what an incredible conversation we're having. Mm-hmm. We can't have this conversation without people saying, well, wait a second, this is good. We need to do more of this. And so that really starts opening up doors for people to listen to what I have to say, and for me to be able to ask the kinds of questions that need to be asked from me to you and to others that are in the field or that are retired and they can talk about it now.
Right. And I'm, ladies and gentlemen, we'll go over social media sites here at the end of this interview today, but if you look on LinkedIn under Benjamin Friedland, and it's Freedland, you can see some of the people he's interviewed. Jimmy Martinez and I worked together in Atlanta. Chris Feisel and I were together in Miami in our early days. Tony Placido was my boss for a long time. Leo Silva, he's been a guest here on this show, as well as Chris and Tony both. So there's a lot of crossover between what you're doing and what we're doing. But I'm curious, where did you get the idea to start this speaking and training business? Is that just something you thought up one day, or did somebody just say, hey, here's something you ought to think about?
Well, I was a speech major at San Francisco State. I've always loved to teach. And when I got injured and I was not really able to make the kind of money that I needed to make driving trucks or RVs, I have an entrepreneurial mindset. It's part of why I was a drug trafficker. And I knew that I had a skill set that could be put to work in a capacity that wasn't being done really anywhere in an open manner, such as the way that I wanted to do it. And so I started to think that this would be a really good idea to go out and start speaking. And I, you know, was successful in having some of those lectures, but it just wasn't paying the bills. It wasn't enough. So mm-hmm. I needed to find a way to get a sponsor and produce the kind of content that I have been producing. And that's what I did. And that's what I'm doing. And that's what I'm going to continue to do, because it's excellent. Very, very important.
How are you received by law enforcement when you go in and you say, I'm here to teach you about informants and how to handle them? Or you get a good reception, or they're like, who's this guy coming in, or what's he going to teach me?
for me, sometimes it, in the beginning, it was terrifying. But y'all are just normal people. Police also put your pants on the same way as I do. And we watch the same TV shows and we read the same books. We're just men and women together in this world. And so now I'm more relaxed. But I think that the people that reach out to me through professional platforms like LinkedIn are very intrigued to talk to me. And they are very excited to get my perspective. And so now where it initially was a little bit anxious and there was I was anxiety ridden, I'm very comfortable now. And I think the people in the room or on the platform, wherever it is that we're communicating, are comfortable and very intrigued to talk because they have questions. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those questions might come up in the course of an investigation, maybe a years long investigation. Sometimes I'm sure that you've hit a brick wall in your investigations. I'm just going to go ahead and say that I know you have, even though because everybody hits a brick wall. But what if there was an opportunity for you to maybe reach out to someone like myself to get a perspective that I can put into play? This is a very important role that I can provide. And I have, and I've had investigators reach out to me with questions about stuff that it's ongoing. I don't know what's happening, but I have an understanding and I can give them my perspective. And if you've hit a brick wall, what else do you have to lose? So
I didn't grow up in the same way you did. I grew up in a blue collar family. My dad was a Southern Baptist minister, so it was a pretty strict household, but I didn't grow up in a criminal element. Neither did you. And you chose one path. I chose the other path. You know more about your side. I know more about my side. So when the two sides get together, that's where you learn from each other. And it's encouraging to hear that these officers are reaching out to you to learn more, because that's what this is all about. You're wanting to defeat the guys that you're up against. This, you've already mentioned the human intelligence ledger. And can you tell our listeners what that's about and what they could expect to hear or read about?
Yeah. Well, first of all, it started off as a publication. I wanted to bottle up my viewership into something that I can create a product for that can be sponsored. And that's really the reality. And just to be completely transparent, I wanted to have something that I could create a sponsorship for so that I can continue doing this work. It is a newsletter. It's a publication which interviews both the law enforcement element and the criminal element in a manner that is, I've given a platform to individuals that have worked in law enforcement and have worked with law enforcement as criminals to allow them to talk about the stories that they've had in the field, but also the way that they have been able to effectively obtain and disseminate and utilize human intelligence. That is the mission of the Human Intelligence Ledger, is to give the people who are in the field that might be green and have not had the type of training that is necessary to be a successful handler, a tactical advantage by reading from grizzled vets like yourself. And to also have the advantage by reading about stuff from confidential sources that have come out, like Margarito Flores and Joshua Lawson, the Aryan general that I interviewed. And so it's very important to listen to what you have to say, but it's also very important to listen to individuals like that, because then you can take both sides and put together and formulate a decision that you can use to your tactical advantage by listening to everything instead of just from one side. That is the mission of my publication. But now I've also started production of my podcast, which I'm in post-production of now and will be forthcoming here in the next week or so. Everyone that I've interviewed on the publication will have an opportunity to be interviewed on the podcast. And then after the podcast, there's going to be some type of coursework that is put together that we've discussed in the podcast and in the publication, so that we can teach lessons from those platforms. So it's not just a one and done publication, and it's not just I'm done talking to you after the podcast is over. My intent is to maintain a relationship with individuals like yourself so that we can continue to teach and not just talk about this on the podcast, but engage with people about lessons that we have uncovered in our conversations and sort of expand on that lesson by lesson. So the publication is great. You know, people read it. The podcast is forthcoming. They'll hear it and they'll understand it. And then there'll be lessons that come from that as well. that can be taught in person if need be.
Do you have a name for your podcast yet?
The Human Ledger. I had to condense it because the Human Intelligence Ledger is too much. So I condensed it to the Human Ledger, and it will be the Human Ledger Podcast. That's really because I wanted to put it on the mic flag, and I couldn't put all those letters together.
Well, you got to do what you got to do. It's Game of Crimes with Murph in the Morning's too long to put on a microphone. And for listeners, when he says human, that's just short for human intelligence, and that's an intelligence community term, and it just means informant information, basically. You've gotten involved as a spokesman for something called Police Narratives AI. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So that's my first sponsor. They are a company that takes police reporting and takes it to the next level. When you're working in the field, so when you were working in West Virginia, Bluefield, right?
Correct.
Okay. When you were working as a police officer in Bluefield, you probably did a lot of police report writing. And back in the day, it wasn't something that you could just type into a computer.
We didn't have computers.
So it's all handwritten reports. So Police Narratives AI essentially takes police reporting, and it makes it a lot easier because instead of wasting hours of your day writing reports, you can just type it into the computer or take it off your body cam, and it will condense it into a report that's effective. And if things are omitted, it will tell you what you need to put in it, and it will write it more effectively. It's not like ChatGPT, because you're not allowed to use ChatGPT because that's public domain. It's a software AI specifically for each department to utilize to make a more effective report. If you take, the example of the Anchorage Police Department that utilizes Police Narratives AI, they are able to save 81 hours of overtime per year per officer because of the effective manner of the police reporting AI that is being used with Police Narratives AI. And that's a huge amount of savings that can be allocated towards something other than a deficit. So it's a force multiplier for agencies to use. It is an effective medium. It helps the prosecutor's office not reject a police report. It's my first sponsor, and I'm very happy that it's a sponsor that I can relate with because it's a good tool. It's not some BS product that I'm trying to push. It's an effective tool for policing. I wouldn't have a sponsor any other way. I'm not going to just take anyone. I'm not going to do some energy drink or whatever protein supplement. This is a product that is aligning with my audience.
Right.
And that is why it's the Human Ledger, because I want law enforcement to be listening to this. Of course, there's going to be grandmas that like true crime that want to understand the dynamics of how police work works and how informants interact with law enforcement. But my audience is the law enforcement community.
And I don't know anything about the system, but if it works the way you're saying it works, that gets the uniforms back on the street where they need to be to fight crime and have a high visibility to protect the good people. We're getting close to the end here, Ben. And I mean, your story is one of redemption where, you went down the wrong path. You got yourself in a bind. You paid your debt to society. You went above and beyond what most people would consider that debt. And now you're out on the other side and you're moving forward as an entrepreneur in legitimate businesses. My hat's off to you because there's a whole lot. We know all about recidivism and how many people go back to that life of crime. So there's not, you're in the minority when it comes to that as a former convict. Do you get a lot of criticism from people because of the change, or do you find that people are more supportive of you once they know what it is you're trying to do?
I don't think I've had anybody that hasn't supported me.
Good.
When I run into officers, for whatever reason, they're always very happy to talk to me because they always want to hear a success story. Officers are not about officers and agents. This is not just lock them up and throw away the key. I think for the most part, the people in law enforcement really like to hear the success of individuals like myself. And I can't think of any criticism. there are some people from my old world, which I continue to communicate with, that are not okay with what I did because I cooperated, but I really don't give a damn of what they think. They're the only critics. And so everyone else is very happy with where I'm at. You know, I've purchased a house 14 months post-release. I was married about 2 years post-release, and I have a beautiful daughter now who's my entire life, and I'd do anything for her. That is my life now. I'm a German Shepherd dad, a girl dad, and a husband. And I'm helping the law enforcement community one agent and one officer at a time. And hopefully that will translate into having an effective relationship with you as a handler, with your potential informant. I hope that from what you hear, that you can take away what you might want to have in that kind of relationship. But if you don't get it from this podcast, you can always reach out to me. I'd be happy to talk to you or your agency, and I'd love to do a seminar or a lecture. And if you're a professor at a criminal justice program, I've been a guest lecturer at universities alike. And so I'm very happy to do that and to spread my knowledge, because I want to leave a legacy for myself and to my family to understand that, you know, I wasn't just about being a criminal, and I'm about redemption and having a success story. I want to build on that so that people can, you know, benefit.
And that's why you're on this show, to be quite honest with you. And ladies and gentlemen, I can vouch for his little girl. I've seen her here on the screen. She's a cutie that you're going to have to keep an eye on her as she gets older. Oh. Trust me. I've got daughters also. So, Ben, if after everything you've been through, the entrepreneurship, successfully graduating from college, to going into the drug business, to where you are now, back on the right side of the thin blue line, if you had it to do all over again, would you change anything?
I wouldn't have ever gone down the path of crime. I should have been a pilot. I should have been a commercial airline pilot. There's so many things I regret. I can't do a lot of things now that I want to do because I'm a felon. And so there's countries I can't visit, and there's things that I can't do. I definitely regret doing what I did. But with that being said, I would never be where I am now. I'm sitting in the master bedroom of the house that I own outright. 4 years ago, I was leaving prison. I had just spent the last 2 weeks of my incarceration in solitary confinement, where I spent 31 months, 2.5 years of my time in solitary. I never anticipated where I would be now, and I'm very happy to be here. So I'm just very honored to be able to do this work, and I'm just going to continue doing it as long as I have a sponsor.
Well, let me ask you this. What do you see in the future of Ben Freeland? What do you see yourself, let's say, in a year from now and maybe 10 years from now?
Well, I have dreams, and those are to, take on the goals that I have. You know, my goal was, when I got out, was to get married, be a father, and buy a house. I've accomplished those goals. And so I have 5 and 10 year goals, but those include, you know, I think a little bit of a nicer house, you know, maybe a little bit more influence, and to be just taken seriously the way that I have been now. I want to just continue this path. You know, this is what I'm doing now. I joked about having a sponsor, but that was really, you know, I need to be able to support myself. So I want to be able to do this and support myself. And I think I have a clear path now. And so I'm going to continue doing that. And I'm going to do that in 5 years and in 10 years. And I'm going to keep having interviews, and I'm going to keep teaching, and I want to be that person, and I want to continue to do that. And so I'm content with where I am now, and I'm just going to keep moving forward. Well, hopefully I'll have success, and I think I'm on the right path.
And I mean, hats off to you. You truly have a strong entrepreneurial spirit. I mean, you showed that before the crime spree and then afterwards as well. So many men and women come out of prison and all they're looking for is to go work for the man somewhere, typically in a blue collar job, just to be quite honest about it, because they don't have the education or the training to do other things. But here, fortunately for you, your parents did get you the education and you came out not looking to work for somebody else, but to work for yourself. Man, that's a lot of freedom. That right there just gives you so much freedom. a lot of responsibility goes with it and a lot of challenges that you don't have if you're working for somebody else. But I think that's one of the things that makes our capitalistic government so great, that we have the freedom in this country to choose what we want to do. And hats off to you for everything that you're doing. I just truly feel that there will be other successes as you continue to grow in this. Here on the Game of Crimes, as long as I'm around, and I'm the only person doing this besides my wife, she helps me edit, we'll support you.
Thank you, Steve. No. Well, I'm looking forward to, you know, having you on my podcast here soon, as soon as I can figure out when to get down to Florida. And like I said, with the structure of how I'm doing things, you know, this will not end with just the publication that we work together on and the podcast that we do. I'd like to put together a lesson plan and allow people to interact with that and maybe take it on the road, you know, as needed, not anything full time, but just something, you know, once a year, potentially. If someone wants to learn about the handler dynamic that we discuss in a particular manner, or if there's other people on the podcast that I have that are, you know, we're cultivating a lesson plan from, then we're going to allow that to become interactive and in person. So I appreciate you and your support, and I look forward to, you know, continuing our friendship.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it.
Absolutely. And just got one more question for you before we go. I ask this of every guest. Do you have any words of wisdom or advice for, especially for those that might be considering a life of crime, but people that are coming out of college that are looking to become entrepreneurs, that might be tempted to take the easy buck, take the easy road? There is a lot of money in crime, but it doesn't pay off when you finally get caught. So just any words of advice or wisdom that you'd like to leave everybody with today.
Crime is not worth it. There's nothing worth 7, 10, 15 years of your life in prison. Prison is terrible. It's a horrible, horrible place. It's not terrible because it's violent. It's not terrible because the food is bad. Those are terrible things. It's terrible because you'll lose your mind and you'll be away from your family. What would compel you to be away from your family? What would compel you to be depressed 24/7, 365 for years? Nothing. You don't want to do it. Nothing's worth it. Don't take the shortcut. Be a man or be a woman. Get a job and do it the right way. Don't do illegal things. It is not worth it. Listen to me. It's not worth it. Doesn't matter if you are, you know, filled with thrill because of something that you did that was not part of the rule book, just let it be. Don't do it again. It's not worth it. And the other last bit of advice I can say is, I think it's very important to set goals in life and figure out a way to achieve them. If I can do it, you can do it. I had nothing 4 years ago, and I'm sitting in my home now, the home that I paid off 28 years early. I have a ring on my finger. I'm married. I have a little girl, and I have more goals. But I had those goals. I attained those goals. And this sounds corny, but like I said, if I can do it from nothing, and you can do it too. And I've come from a tremendous hardship, and I can essentially do anything. I did 31 months of solitary confinement. I can do anything, and so can you.
Excellent. Excellent. And ladies and gentlemen, that's what sets this show apart from many of the other true crime podcasts that are out there. I'm not dissing any of them, but the point of the Game of Crimes is to bring you guests on here so that you hear from them what it's like to be in law enforcement, what it's like to be in the military, what it's like to be associated with criminal justice, and what it's like to be on the other side of the thin blue line where you're involved in crime and you hear from former criminals on here. You know, Ben's not the first one. We've had a variety of criminals on here, and it's everything from George Young, who was the old-time weed smuggler and ended up smuggling cocaine for Pablo Escobar. We got his last interview before he passed away a few years ago. To Mike Franzese, who was a leading member of the Colombo Mafia crime family. These are people that have been there and done that. And that's what you just heard. You heard words of advice from somebody that's been there and done that and told you how it sucked, how bad it was. So, Ben, thank you for doing that. I really appreciate that, brother. I want to give everybody your social media sites here now. And for those of you that are watching on YouTube, you'll see a screen pop up here so you can jot these down or you can do a screenshot and save them. And if you're listening to it on audio, go over to YouTube, subscribe to Game of Crimes, and then you'll see the screen. Come and see what these people look like. You can see when I say I'm an old fart, you'll see that I'm telling the truth. I'm an old fart here. But you just mentioned your podcast, and that's going to be the Humint Ledger. That's H-U-M-I-N-T, right? So that'll be coming out soon on Instagram. I've got you at, and this is on Instagram and Facebook both, Ben Friedland or the Human underscore Intelligence underscore Ledger. Okay, let me give that to you again. Ben Friedland, and again, his last name is spelled F-R-E-E-D-L-A-N-D, or you can look up Human underscore Intelligence underscore Ledger. On TikTok, look at Humint Ledger, H-U-M-I-N-T Ledger. On X, it's Ben Friedland. On LinkedIn, I've already given you this, but I'll give it to you again, Benjamin Friedland. You'll learn a lot about him there. That's where I learned most things. And then he's got a website called their strategicinformantsolutions.com. Again, strategicinformantsolutions.com. Did I miss anything, Ben?
There's a Substack, which has all of my articles that are available on LinkedIn, but they're available on Substack. So if you don't have a LinkedIn, you can read all of the publications on Substack, which are also posted on Instagram and Facebook as well.
And where do they find you on Substack?
The Human Intelligence Ledger.
There you go.
It will all be available underneath on the bottom here.
There you go. Do you by any chance have any plans to write a book?
I've written a book. I wrote it in prison, and I will. It's very difficult for me to. It's already written. I just need to transcribe it. I'm in the middle of doing it. I have been asked by many people to complete it, so I need to get around to doing that. And I think I'll be doing that by the end of this year.
Okay. And if you get it out, let me know, and we'll let all our listeners know about it, where they can find it.
Okay. Great.
Which, I'm going to guess it's going to be on Amazon because you can find anything on Amazon.
Yes. And also, by the way, the podcast will be available on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. But, you know, all you have to do is just type in the Human Intelligence Ledger or Benjamin Friedland. You should be able to find it pretty easily.
Very good. And that's how I found most of the things about him, everybody. So don't be bashful. Show the guy some support. He's turned his life around. He's trying to do right by himself and by his family. So help a guy out here. Ben, thank you very much for coming on the show. The transparency that you show, and you're not holding back. I know that there's certain things that you can't talk about, especially people that you can't talk about. We tried to limit the techniques that we talk about in law enforcement here that he's familiar with, because and none of this was to create a drug smuggling 101 class, but it gives you an inside look of how things happen and you know, how they develop. So, not quite sure why you folks continue to come back here every week to the Game of Crimes, but especially after today's show, I know why you come back. It's because you enjoy playing the biggest, the baddest, the most dangerous game of all, and that's the Game of Crimes. God bless everyone. Thank you so much. I'll see you next week.